New Year's Eve has never been my scene. While most people count down the seconds to midnight with friends or strangers, surrounded by champagne and confetti, I've always preferred quiet, reflective celebrations. As a photographer, nature has always been my greatest muse. So last year, I decided to welcome 2024 by doing what I loved most: hiking alone in the Appalachian wilderness near Asheville, North Carolina, with my camera in hand. The day was cold, the kind of cold that nips at your nose but invigorates your lungs. I packed light, my favorite Nikon camera, a thermos of coffee, some granola bars, and a flashlight. The trail I chose was relatively short, leading to an overlook that promised a stunning view of the Blue Ridge Mountains. I planned to shoot some photos at sunset, sip my coffee, and maybe catch the stars as they emerged. The hike started gratefully. The trail was quiet with no one else around, which was exactly how I liked it. Solitude in nature has always been my reset button. As the sun began to set, I reached the overlook. The view didn't disappoint. Rolling hills blanketed in shades of orange and purple, with the promise of a clear, starry night ahead. I set up my tripod and spent the next hour capturing the changing light. It was as the last light faded and the sky turned inky black that I saw them. At first, I thought it was just weird shadows, but as I adjusted my camera's focus, I realized there were figures standing among the trees about 50 feet away. 5 or 6 people, maybe more. They were wearing masks, not the cheap party kind, but detailed, grotesque masks that looked hand-carved. Some had exaggerated animal features, others were distorted human faces. They didn't move, didn't speak. They just stood there, looking at me. "Happy New Year," I muttered to myself. Deciding to mind my own business, I packed up my gear and started heading back down the trail. That's when the footsteps started. I stopped, swung my flashlight around, and stared into the dark trees, trying to catch something, anything out of the ordinary. But the trail behind me was empty, just the quiet whisper of wind in the branches. Still, unease crawled under my skin. I picked up my pace, convincing myself it was probably just an animal, or just my imagination running wild as usual. In the darkness of the forest, it is easy to get confused and scared for no reason. But then the footsteps got louder and closer. I stopped again, whipping the flashlight around. Something stirred at the very edge of the illuminated area. Not a deer. Definitely not my imagination. "Hello?" I called out, though it felt more like a croak. The silence that followed was almost suffocating. No response, no rustling, no retreating footsteps, just nothing. I started walking faster. My heart felt like it was going to jump out of my mouth. Every step felt like it took me deeper into a trap. The familiar markers I'd noted on my way in, the split tree, the moss-covered boulder, were harder to spot in the dark, and the trail seemed to stretch longer than I remembered. The flashlight jittered in my unsteady hand, casting shadows that danced and shifted, fueling my paranoia. Then I saw them again. The masked figures were back. This time, they weren't scattered in the distance. They were closer, standing just off the trail, hidden in the shadows of the trees. My flashlight caught fragments of their forms. There were more of them now, maybe 8 or 9, all frozen in place like some twisted tableau. They weren't moving, but they weren't just standing either. They were waiting. I backed away. "What do you want?" I yelled, my voice cracking. They didn't answer. Of course they didn't. They just stood there, their horrifying masks crooked, as though they were scrutinizing me. One mask had antlers. Another was streaked with what looked like dried blood. The whole thing felt surreal, like some nightmare I couldn't wake up from. Then they stepped forward. All of them, in unison. I didn't wait to see what came next. Adrenaline surged and I bolted down the trail, the beam of my flashlight bouncing wildly as I ran. Branches snagged at my jacket, roots clawed at my boots, but I didn't care. The sound of their footsteps followed me, echoing through the woods. They weren't running, but they didn't need to. Their pace was steady, relentless, like they knew I couldn't outrun them. When I finally broke through the tree line into the parking lot, I felt relief, but it was gone almost immediately. My car, parked alone at the edge of the lot, was now blocked by a pile of logs and branches. It was deliberate. Whoever these people were, they'd planned this. "No, no, no," I muttered, fumbling with my keys as I sprinted to the car. I flung myself inside, locking the doors, my hands shaking so badly it took 3 tries to get the key into the ignition. I finally managed to start the car, and the headlights illuminated the figures emerging from the woods. They stood just at the edge of the lot, their masks glowing in the beams. They came slowly walking toward me. Screw it. I threw the car into gear and floored it. A loud screech came from the tires as they slammed into the makeshift barrier. The sound of splintering wood and grinding branches was chaotic as the car jolted and bounced over the obstruction. I didn't care about the damage. I just needed to get out of there. As I sped down the road, the rearview mirror showed nothing but darkness. Somehow, that felt worse than if they'd been following me. The next morning, my car was a mess. Scratched paint, a cracked headlight, and some dents on the...
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Bumper. I didn't know what to make of the night before, so I told my friend Derek about it over coffee. He listened, then pulled out his phone. "Dude, have you heard about that YouTube channel? They do these creepy Appalachian Trail pranks." He showed me a few clips, and my stomach sank. The masks, the woods, it all matched. "You think it was them?" I asked, half in disbelief, half relieved it wasn't something more sinister. "Only one way to find out," he said, pulling up their contact info. I emailed the channel, describing what had happened. A few hours later, they replied, "Yeah, that was us. Sorry if we freaked you out. We didn't think anyone was actually hiking that late. We can cover the damage to your car. Just let us know the repair costs." I didn't know whether to be pissed or relieved. On one hand, it wasn't some malevolent cult or supernatural force. On the other hand, they deliberately terrorized me for clicks. I sent them the repair estimate and left it at that. And even though I know it was just a prank, the memory of those masks lurking in the dark still makes my skin crawl. Some things, joke or not, stick with you. In New York City, New Year's Eve pulses with a unique magic, the lights, the energy, and the hope that comes with turning the page to a new year. For me, though, the night started off on a typical note. A rooftop party at my friend Rachel's apartment seemed like the perfect way to close out the chaos of 2019. After a year that had pushed everyone to their limits, I craved a night of laughter and celebration. Rachel's place was a dream. Huge windows with a breathtaking skyline view, the kind of view you only see in magazines. The party buzzed with a mix of familiar faces and strangers. The countdown was electric, the fireworks visible between the buildings. For a moment, it felt like things might be okay again. By 1 a.m., the guests had started trickling out. I stayed a little longer to give Rachel a hand with the mess, but exhaustion finally set in. It was time to call it a night. I grabbed my coat and bag, waved goodbye, and made my way to the elevators. The hallway was quiet. As I approached the elevator, I noticed a man leaning against the wall near the doors, scrolling on his phone. He looked vaguely familiar, tall, late 30s, with neatly combed dark hair, but I couldn't place him. Probably someone from the party, I thought. The elevator arrived with a soft ding. I stepped in, instinctively holding the door for the man. Then he walked in. "Thanks," he said. "No problem," I replied, hitting the button for the lobby. He didn't press another button. The doors closed and the elevator began its descent. The first few seconds were okay. I leaned against the wall, scrolling through my texts, and he stood across from me, hands in his pockets, occasionally looking at me. Then the elevator jolted. It wasn't violent. Just enough to make the lights flicker briefly before the car came to a complete stop. I hit the lobby button again, but nothing happened. Great, I said, pressing the emergency call button. A mechanical chime sounded, followed by silence. The man chuckled softly. Classic New York elevators, huh? Yeah, I said, forcing a smile. They don't make them like they used to. He sounded relaxed, yet I felt a subtle edge I couldn't define. I dialed the building's emergency number on my phone, relieved to see I still had a signal. A woman answered, assuring me a technician was on the way. Looks like we'll be here for a bit, I said, trying to break the awkward silence. The man responded, Guess so. You coming from the party upstairs? Yeah, you? Something like that. The first 10 minutes passed with standard small talk, work, the weather, the party. But as time passed, his behavior started to shift. His questions became more personal. Do you live in the building? No, just visiting a friend. You seem familiar. Weren't you wearing that red dress earlier? I wasn't wearing red. I was in a black sweater and jeans. No, that wasn't me. Huh, my mistake, he said with a small smile, but there was no sincerity in his eyes. I tried to shrug it off, but the comment left a sour taste. Something about the way he said it felt weird, like he wanted to see how I'd react. 15 minutes turned into 20, then 30. The air felt heavier, the walls closer. I couldn't focus on my phone anymore. I was too aware of his presence, the way his eyes stayed on me a little too long. You don't seem nervous, he said, breaking the silence. Should I be? I asked, trying to keep my tone light. He laughed softly, shaking his head. Just making conversation. He didn't break eye contact for a second. I was suddenly hyper-aware of the limited space between us. At one point, he moved closer to the control panel, pressing random buttons as if testing them. When nothing happened, he let out an exaggerated sigh and leaned back against the wall. This is taking forever, he said. By the 40-minute mark, I couldn't push the creeping tension out of my mind. I discreetly activated the emergency app on my phone, sending my location to Rachel and a few other contacts. A text from Rachel popped up almost immediately. What's wrong? Stuck in the elevator. Not alone. Something feels off. I typed back. Her response was immediate. Want me to call someone? Already did. Just stay by your phone. The man noticed me typing and asked, Someone waiting for you? No, just letting my friend know what's going on. I managed to sound composed, hiding the nervous tension bubbling beneath the surface. Good idea. Always best to let someone know where you are, just in case. As the minutes dragged on, his questions grew darker. Ever think about how vulnerable people are in elevators? He asked, his tone almost casual. You're just stuck. Nowhere to run, no one to hear you scream. I stared at him, unsure how to respond. His smile widened, as if he enjoyed my discomfort. Relax, he said, chuckling. I'm just messing with you. I forced a laugh, but my heart was racing. I gripped my phone tighter, mentally rehearsing how I'd react if he tried anything. Finally, a crackling voice came through the speaker. Hello? Can anyone hear me? Yes, I shouted, relief flooding through me. We're working to get the elevator moving. Hang tight, it shouldn't be much longer. The man's face grew tense. For the first time, he looked genuinely irritated. When the elevator jolted again and the doors began to slide open, I stepped forward instinctively. But as I moved, he blocked my path. Ladies first, he said, his voice low. Thanks, I said cautiously, edging around him. My heart raced as I stepped into the hallway, the two maintenance workers waiting just outside. I looked back to see him standing in the elevator, his eyes locked on me. You okay, miss? One of the workers asked. My legs felt like jelly, but I lied. Yeah, thanks. I made my way out of the lobby as fast as I could and got into a cab before he could even step out of the elevator. I can't fully explain what happened in that elevator. Maybe he was just an odd guy with a bad sense of humor, or maybe it was something darker. Either way, it's a night I'll never forget. New Year's Eve might be about new beginnings, but for me, it became a lesson in how quickly things can go from celebratory to chilling, and how thin the line is between safety and danger. New Year's Eve had always been my favorite night of the year. The glitter, the champagne, the shared energy of excitement as the clock ticked closer to midnight. It was intoxicating. As an event planner, this was my Super Bowl, and December 31st, 2021 was no different. I had just wrapped up coordinating a massive party in downtown Denver, and despite the exhaustion, I felt exhilarated. The event had gone off without a hitch. The guests were happy, the DJ killed it, and I even managed to snag a flute of champagne to toast the new year. By 1 a.m., the crowd was starting to thin out, and I knew it was time to head home. My apartment was only a 15-minute walk away, and the streets were still alive with the energy of celebration. It felt safe enough. I stepped out into the cold night, the city lights shimmering against the dark sky. Groups of revelers stumbled down the sidewalks, laughing and shouting, while taxis and rideshares clogged the streets. The sound of fireworks echoed in the distance. I tightened my coat around me and started walking, my heels clicking against the pavement. A few blocks in, I noticed a man walking about 20 feet behind me. He wasn't close enough to cause immediate concern, but something about his pace caught my attention. It wasn't hurried like he was trying to catch up, but it wasn't leisurely either. I looked back, pretending to adjust my scarf. He was tall, wearing a dark hoodie with the hood pulled up, and his hands were stuffed into his pockets, but it was New Year's Eve, everyone was out. He was probably just heading home like me. Still, I couldn't help but pick up my pace. The festive chatter of nearby groups was comforting, reminding me that I wasn't alone. But as I turned onto a quieter street, the sounds of celebration faded, and I realized he was still behind me. I told myself not to panic. Maybe he lived in the same direction. Maybe this was all a coincidence. I crossed the street, and so did he. My heart started to race. I'd listened to enough true crime stories to know when something didn't feel right. I decided to test him. At the next intersection, I turned left instead of continuing straight toward my apartment. If he followed, I'd know. Sure enough, he turned left too. Okay, now I was panicking a little. I pulled out my phone and pretended to text, hoping the act of holding it would deter him. I even called a friend, but it went to voicemail. "Hey, just walking home," I said loudly. "Should be there in 10 minutes. See you soon." I looked back. He was closer now, maybe 10 feet behind. His posture was focused. I'd had enough. I ducked into a nearby convenience store, the bell jingling as I pushed the door open. The fluorescent lights and warm air clashed with the cold, dark street. The clerk looked up from his magazine. "Hey, just browsing," I said. I lingered by the snack aisle, peeking out the window. The man had stopped outside, leaning casually against a lamppost. He wasn't looking at the store, but I knew he was waiting. I could hear my heartbeat pounding in my ears. I pulled out my phone again, debating whether to call the police, but I could already hear the skepticism in their response. After a few minutes, I decided to make a break for it. I left the store and darted into a nearby alley, weaving through the narrow path until I reached another street. I looked over my shoulder. No sign of him. Maybe I'd lost him. I made it home without further incident. I unlocked the door to my building and practically sprinted up the stairs to my apartment. Once inside, I locked every bolt, drew the curtains, and sat on the couch, trying to calm my nerves. It was over. I was safe, or so I thought. Around 3 a.m., as I was beginning to let the tension go, I heard a soft knock at my window. My apartment was on the second floor. Every muscle in my body tensed. The knock came again, louder. Slowly, I crept toward the window, careful not to make a sound. My hands shook as I peeked through the curtain. He was there, standing on the fire escape. The hood was down now, revealing a face I didn't recognize. His expression was calm, almost smug, as if he knew exactly how terrified I was. I backed away. How did he find me? Had he followed me through the alley, watched me enter my building? And why was he doing this? I grabbed my phone and dialed 911, whispering to the dispatcher as I explained the situation. "Someone's outside my window. I'm on the second floor. Please hurry." The dispatcher stayed on the line, assuring me that officers were on their way. Meanwhile, the man didn't move. He just stood there, staring, his breath fogging up the glass. Minutes felt like hours. Then I heard the distant wail of sirens. The man's head snapped toward the sound, and without hesitation, he climbed back down the fire escape and disappeared into the night. The police arrived shortly after. They searched the area but found no sign of him. I gave them a description, though it felt woefully inadequate. Tall, late 30s maybe, dark hoodie. How many men in Denver fit that description? They advised me to stay somewhere else for the night, but I couldn't bring myself to leave. Instead, I sat up until dawn. I never saw the man again, but for a long time, I didn't walk alone on the street or open my curtains. It happened 3 years ago, and I think I'll never forget the way his face looked at the window. New Year's Eve used to be my favorite night of the year, my working Super Bowl. Now it serves as proof of how easily a happy night can become a nightmare, and how some strangers aren't content to stay strangers. When you're a lawyer, your life is often dictated by deadlines, case files, and an endless stream of emails. That's why I decided to spend New Year's Eve alone in my apartment. No parties, no loud crowds, just a quiet night with a bottle of wine, a book, and the glittering view of the Seattle skyline. It felt like the perfect way to recharge before diving back into work. I live on the 15th floor of a high-rise in downtown Seattle. My apartment isn't huge, but the balcony makes it feel spacious. From my living room, I can see the Space Needle and the city's sprawling lights. On New Year's Eve, the balcony is a front row seat to the fireworks display of the city's celebration. The night started out perfectly. I made myself a simple dinner, poured a glass of wine, and curled up on the couch with a novel. The faint noises of festivities from the streets below gave the night a festive buzz without intruding on my solitude. By the time the clock approached midnight, I was ready to step out onto the balcony and watch the fireworks. I wrapped a blanket around my shoulders and slid open the glass door. The cold air hit me immediately, crisp and biting, but refreshing. The city looked alive, lights twinkling in every direction. I leaned on the railing, taking it all in, feeling a rare sense of peace. That's when I saw him. Across from my balcony, on the adjacent high rise, a figure stood on the neighboring balcony. It wasn't unusual to see people out enjoying the view, but something about this person gave me pause. The person was motionless. At first, I assumed it was a neighbor I hadn't met yet. After all, the apartment next door had been empty for months, and I figured someone must have moved in recently. I gave a polite wave, a casual acknowledgement of shared proximity. The figure didn't move, didn't wave back. Instead, the person seemed to be staring directly at me. I let it go, focusing instead on the city below. But when I glanced back a few moments later, the figure was still there, standing, watching. A knot formed in my chest, but I told myself I was being ridiculous. Maybe they were shy or lost in thought. Midnight arrived and the fireworks lit up the sky. For a while, I forgot about the figure and lost myself in the spectacle. But as the final sparks faded and the city began to settle, I looked back across the way. The balcony was empty. The absence should have been comforting, but it wasn't. Something about how they'd stood there, unmoving, watching, it gave me a bad feeling. I stepped back inside, locking the balcony door behind me. For good measure, I drew the curtains, blocking out the night. The next morning, I tried to put it out of my mind. People are weird sometimes, I told myself. Maybe they were just drunk and didn't realize how creepy they'd seemed. By afternoon, I decided to call the building manager. I wanted to ask about the new tenant next door, maybe introduce myself, clear the air. When I reached her, she sounded surprised. "That unit is still unoccupied," she said. "We haven't rented it out yet." I paused, unsure how to respond. "Are you sure?" "Because someone was on the balcony last night. I saw them." There was a beat of silence on the other end. That doesn't make sense. There shouldn't be anyone there." Goosebumps crawled up my neck. "Could someone have broken in?" "I'll send maintenance to check," she said, with a mix of concern and skepticism. "But if you're feeling unsafe, maybe you should call the police." After hanging up, I stood in my living room, staring at the curtains. I wanted to look to check if the balcony was still empty, but a part of me was too afraid of what I might see. Finally, I worked up the courage to draw the curtain aside and take a cautious look. The balcony was empty. For a brief second, I felt relieved. but it was over before I knew it. That evening, every time I passed by the window, I felt an inexplicable urge to look outside, as if expecting to see the figure return. By the time night fully descended, my nerves were frayed. Around 10 p.m., I decided I couldn't handle it anymore. I grabbed my phone and called the police. They promised to send an officer to check it out. While I waited, I kept the lights off, sitting in the corner of the room where I could see the balcony without being seen. It felt like the shadows outside were alive, making my exhausted eyes question what I was seeing. When the officers arrived, they searched the area thoroughly. The neighboring apartment was empty, and there were no signs of forced entry. They assured me the building was secure, but it wasn't enough to calm my nerves. "If anything else happens, don't hesitate to call us," one of them said. The next morning, I emailed my landlord and gave my notice. I couldn't stay there anymore. The thought of stepping onto that balcony, of feeling those unseen eyes on me, was unbearable. Within a week, I was packed and gone, leaving behind the view I'd once loved. Even now, in my new apartment, I avoid balconies at night. Sometimes I catch myself looking out the window, expecting to see someone staring back. If these New Year's Eve nightmares gave you chills, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe for more terrifying stories. What would you have done in these situations? Share your thoughts in the comments. We'd love to hear your survival instincts. Send this video to a friend who swears New Year's Eve is all about fun and fireworks, and see if they still agree. Remember, even the happiest nights can hide the darkest dangers. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.